The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. Nathan, it's been a while since you've been on the show. We've had great the past couple of weeks. You haven't been able to come on and talk about your Oklahoma City Thunder winning an NBA championship. You're the only one of the three of us that have actually experienced your NBA team winning a championship. So what has that been like for you?
Well, it's unbelievable. I think when I go back and think about all the moments of being an Oklahoma City fan and all the different teams that I've witnessed and the star players, and I didn't think that this would be the team that would have gotten it done first. That would have been James Harden and the original Big Three with KD and Russ. But just seeing these guys when we were losing games, Chase stuck with the franchise even after we traded Paul George away and really just got rid of all the value with the team. And then having Shea turn into the player that he is, the MVP, one of the best players in the world, I think that's just an absolute seal, and that just shows how much Sam Presti pays attention to everyone in the league, and even the people that you think don't matter. But he's been able to capitalize a lot in the draft and bring in a lot of key pieces. And I go back to last year because I thought, you know, even being the one seed, I was worried, and I think the youngness played into the factor of us losing in the second round to the Mavericks. But we go back in the offseason, and we traded for key pieces. Alex Caruso, one of the biggest, Isaiah Hartenstein coming in, allowing Chet to play in a natural four. Just different things that Sam Presti recognized, and it led us to a championship. I don't think it was a easy path, like people say. Memphis, I know that was a sweep, and John Morant got hurt, and I hated that for him, but that was just the Thunder imposing their dominance for the most part, and then the bigger series being Oklahoma City versus Denver, that going to seven games, and having to find different ways to stop Jokic, and then ultimately you play a good Timberwolves team in the Western Conference Finals, and I think really we took advantage of them missing a lot of depth, and then you go into the finals against a red-hot Pacers team that has been underdogs throughout the entire playoffs, and they just found ways to win. They hit buzzer beaters, and you go down 1-0 after Tyrese Haliburton hits his usual buzzer beater against you at home, and you really question where you are as a team, but I think it is important to note how much adversity that team had shown all year long. There was a reason why they had broken so many records, and there was a reason why they were so historical. It's because they had that amount of adversity to go through. It's an unbelievable feeling, and I hope we can repeat. I think we're in a terrific spot to repeat, but as far as just witnessing my first championship for the Thunder, surreal.
It's hard to repeat. There hasn't been a repeat since the Warriors, since the Raptors won it. A new team has won it every year, so it's going to be hard to repeat for the Thunder going forward, looking at what other teams have done around the league. The Rockets, the Magic in the East, the Hawks, they have made some key changes here and there. Even the Cavs have done a few things, getting Lonzo Ball being the biggest one. The Thunder don't have the easiest path to the NBA Finals, but they're going to bring back the entire roster. You add a new rookie in Thomas Sorber, and then two-way contracts. Brooks Barnheiser has one locked up. There's one more spot left. We can sit here all day and kind of hypothesize who's that going to be. We kind of know who it's going to be, Nathan, watching Summer League. But it's been crazy watching the Thunder grow from the worst team in the NBA to being the best team in the NBA record-wise, stat-wise, player-wise. It's just crazy to see the historic rise of that team. And poor Gray and his team has been the worst team in the NBA for his entire lifetime. I feel for the dude. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here today to talk about that and then talk about what we got coming up, Nathan. We're going to go by levels here, starting out in high school football, then college football, and then the NFL, and then we have a funny little thing to wrap up the show today. But let's start off with the high school football story. Teddy Bridgewater has been suspended. It came out that he has been suspended from his position as a high school head coach at his alma mater, Miami Northwestern in Florida, for allegedly providing impermissible benefits to his players. There was a post he made on Facebook that said he had covered Uber rides, pregame meals, recovery services, including physical therapy, for his players last season. And then he asked fans to donate this season to help cover the expenses so he doesn't have to pay for it all out of his pocket this year. Was this right for the high school and athletic association in Florida to suspend Teddy Bridgewater, considering he had, granted, he had paid for stuff for athletes, but in a community where some athletes don't have the benefit of the doubt when it comes to having money to pay for those certain things, and the school doesn't have the ability to pay for pregame meals? What is athletic association doing high school wise?
Well, I mean, I know they have certain rules in place, and that is to protect the athletes from being taken advantage of. But this is type of behavior that we need to uplift in the community. What Teddy Bridgewater was able to do last season as a coach, and being there for these kids and providing for them, and not everyone has the access to certain things, like you said. And the fact that Teddy Bridgewater was able to use his wealth and the money that he financially gained from the NFL and uses it for the community to uplift his roster. I mean, it's incredible. That's not something we should punish. I think it's horrible that the athletic association went through that and decided to suspend him. I get their rules in place, but this is something that you want to see and you want to encourage. And by suspending a coach for doing it, it cracks down on anything in the future. So you really wonder, is this something we need to change in the rules? And I think it absolutely is. Number one, it affects coaching and it affects that the team, the players, the players' families, everyone around them who don't have access to certain benefits. So I hate it. I absolutely do. And I think the rule needs to be changed, but I get that they were in trying to enforce a rule that was already set up.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is I get the rule, especially with the NIL and what it's done to college football trickling down to high school football. Now we've talked about it numerous times on this show, the Thompson High School football player getting offered six figures to go play high school football in Texas. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine what's happening in Florida with their NIL loose guidelines there. This could be seen in some aspects and in some programs, some high schools, as luring athletes to come to your school, whether, you know, not saying Teddy Bridgewater did this, but a coach promising a player, hey, if you come to my school, I'll cover your physical therapy, I'll pay for all your rides, I'll pay for all your gear, all that type of stuff. That can be alluring to athletes coming to a program or transferring from high school to high school. So I understand from the high school athletic association's point of view of having this rule in place to prevent stuff like that from happening. But that's not what Teddy Bridgewater was doing here. He was uplifting his community, supporting people that couldn't support really their kids in this program. They couldn't afford to maybe pay for Uber rides. The kids didn't have a ride to football practice. That's prevalent in this society where both parents have to work to make ends meet. Sometimes the parents can't make it home in time to get their students to school to make practice. Physical therapy, that's pricey, especially if you don't have health insurance and stuff like that. It's not like Teddy Bridgewater was trying to get athletes to come to his school. He was retaining athletes that were already there and making sure they were taken care of so they can succeed not only in football, but in life, and don't have to worry about expenses that they didn't need to worry about. It's just, you see both sides of the coin, and it's hard to find middle ground, but athletic associations around the country need to find that middle ground where you're allowing coaches to help athletes and help parents of these athletes, but also preventing coaches from using the rule and abusing it to where they're luring athletes to the program by paying for certain things. That's the middle ground you have to find. And unfortunately, Teddy Bridgewater was the poster child of this. I really do hope that he's not the last person that has to deal with the first person. Hope he's the first and last person that has to deal with this. And the high school athletic associations around the country will make necessary changes to uplift the coaches and the players in these communities. Something more idiotic, Nathan, than what that ruling was.
Woo! We get to talk about this.
Greg McElroy went on Paul Feinbaum during SEC Media Days. Pretty interesting comment he made. He said someone very much in the know someone he respects and trusts believes Nick Saban is not done with coaching. The quote here is, "This is a little bit out of left field, but the question was asked of me by a very much in the know person that I have a lot of respect for. They seem to think Nick Saban's not done coaching. He's pretty adamant that he thinks Nick Saban will be coaching again. Well, if it wasn't someone noticeable, I never'd say a word." Is Nick Saban done coaching, or is he coming back, Nathan? Because according to Greg McElroy, he's coming back. Greg McElroy did follow up and say he doesn't believe he'll come back, and Paul Feinbaum said he doesn't believe either. But
yeah, first of all, I would say talk to Miss Terry, because Miss Terry would have a lot to say on the matter. But whatever source, I don't care who it is. If it's not from Nick Saban directly, this is not something you leak. This is not something you talk about, because it is very obvious that Nick Saban last year was very happy with the way things went and going through game day and being able to go around the different campuses and being involved in ESPN and what all they do there. And I think he's enjoyed being retired from coaching. I think that he is in a very good spot. He's enjoyed being around his family and along with this area. So there's not anything that says, oh, yeah, he wants to come back. There's not an immediate thing that he's unhappy doing what he's doing right now. This is something Greg McElroy should have kept to himself. I think as a member of the media, it is disrespectful to not only Nick Saban, but a lot of people in the industry to leak this kind of news when we don't even think that it's relatively true. I mean, I don't see any factual evidence behind it. There's been nothing. There's been no other sources or talks. It is basically just a rumor to get hype started on something that's not going to happen. And whether that just be Greg McElroy trying to fish for more engagement from people, or SEC Network making him say it as more of a plant, or ESPN just trying to get a rise out of certain people. I don't know what it is, but this is super idiotic to say. And if you're not 100% on something someone is saying, it shouldn't be broadcast to the media. It shouldn't be spread like wildfire like this. This is just disrespectful to media and journalists.
If you can't identify the source in something like this, you don't need to be talking about it. Now, there are certain subjects where you can't, or you shouldn't identify a source by name. But in this situation, talking about Nick Saban in college football, you better have a source and you better name it. Even if you say a college athletic director or so on and so forth said Nick Saban is not done with coaching, well, at least you put, okay, well, there's some merit behind this. It's a college athletic director.
Yeah, exactly.
For all we know, it could be Greg McElroy's brother or something. You know, it could be some random person that he knows and trusts, but might not be trustworthy to us. It's wild that he went on Paul Feinbaum and made this comment without having any factual evidence, like you said, Nathan, to back it up. It felt like it was made for clicks.
Exactly.
And I guess it worked because we're sitting here talking about it.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about Nick Saban coming back to college football, let's say it's somewhat true. Nick Saban does. I will have to be institutionalized.
Well,
I mean, I will go if he isn't on another sideline. I you won't see me. I will be somewhere else. That would be, I think. Would you agree, Nathan? It would tarnish his legacy as the greatest coach of all time.
I think it would, and you know that plays into another factor. Why would Nick Saban come back to college football in the state that it's in now? He already said he didn't agree with it. He already said that it didn't benefit his coaching style. So why would he come back and go and take over a school to go lose games and tarnish his legacy? There's no point to. He also said that he wouldn't coach at any other school besides Alabama ever again. So it's not like he's going to go take Caleb DeBoer's head coaching job. There are viable spots for him within the school where he can coach, but I don't think that it's likely he goes back to coaching, and I don't even think it's likely that he's a head coach if he comes back. I think he is fine taking a secondary role if he did. But again, this is all speculation. There's no factual evidence to back this up. This is nothing but clickbait, and Greg McElroy is the cause of it. And a lot of people know how I feel about Greg McElroy. He played for the University of Alabama. He did a lot of great things for that team, for the school, for the fan base. But now he makes me mad with the amount of stuff he says. He is so anti-Alabama. It makes me it's so incredibly mad. I cannot watch him. I don't get why he is so anti-Alabama now. I guess he just doesn't want to appear biased whenever he does commentating. But it is so annoying, and I've lost a lot of respect for him for some of the stuff he said. And stuff like this makes me lose even more respect for him.
It's wild. The only way I think Nick Saban gets back to coaching is if he's in a situation like Kalen DeBoer is at Alabama, where Kalen DeBoer has a GM in Courtney Morgan, who's the best in the country, and Courtney Morgan manages a transfer portal. He goes and talks to those players. He handles writing the checks. He does all that type of stuff. And Kalen DeBoer really handles somewhat a little bit of high school recruiting. If he has to get in the transfer portal, he handles that a little bit, meeting with the players, talking with them. And then Kalen DeBoer handles, obviously, coaching. That's what Nick Saban would want to do if he got back into coaching, is have the GM handle the stuff he doesn't want to handle like Courtney Morgan does. That would be the only situation Nick Saban ever considers coming back to coaching, is if he goes to an Alabama-type program that has a GM that is the best at what he does, and Nick Saban does not have to deal with all the crap that goes on with the transfer portal. Because that's the reason he really left coaching to begin with, was the transfer portal. And when players, after their loss against Michigan, went up to him and said, okay, how much money am I going to get to come back? How much money can I make here? They weren't worried about coming back next year and getting back to the situation and winning the game. They worry about getting money. The only situation I see is the GM situation that they have at Alabama, luring Nick Saban back to coaching.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last thing of the football discussion today, Nathan, moving on to our pro football, the NFL, and the NFL rookie holdouts. It was reported earlier that Los Angeles Chargers' second-round pick from this year's draft, wide receiver Trey Harris, is a training camp holdout and is very well the first and unprecedented number of holdouts for second-round draft picks. This comes after the Texans and the Browns guaranteed the full deals of their second-round picks, Jaden Higgins and Carson. I can't pronounce his last name. I'll probably get in trouble if I try to. They were the two of the top three picks in the first round, or they were the top two picks in the second round. Sorry. And then you also have guys like Shamar Stewart and Jahdae Barron, who were first-round draft picks that still have not signed their contracts either. And you have Shamar Stewart back at Texas A&M working out and refusing to sign any contract with the Bengals. What is going on in the NFL, Nathan? This is, like I said, unprecedented.
Well, first of all, a lot of the blame falls on the Texans and the Browns for guaranteeing second-round contracts. That's not something that's been done in the NFL. It's not something that should be done in the NFL. First-round guarantees for their contracts, that's completely fine. First-round, that warrants it. That's a locked-in player right there. You guarantee that man's money because they're going to make an impact for the most part. There's not going to be a lot of busts there. When you get into the second round, I get being on the cusp of being a first-round pick, but you were picked in the second round for a reason. You weren't good enough to be a first-round talent. There's a lot of indecisiveness with you still, so we're not going to guarantee your money until you prove it on the field. You are a rookie in the NFL, and while you might have proved stuff at college, there's still a lot to prove in the NFL. And obviously, you weren't one of the best players to get drafted in the first round, so it's something you have to go prove. But it falls on the franchises that wanted to go and guarantee these second-round contracts. So now every other player in the second round is going to see, oh, well, these guys got their contracts guaranteed and their second-round picks. Why can't I, who got drafted in the second round, get my contract guaranteed as well? And it's going to be a domino effect because people are eventually going to give in. All these second-round picks are going to get their contracts guaranteed, and then some franchise at some time is going to guarantee a third-round pick's contract. And it's going to be a domino effect. So it's horrible. And then when you go and talk about Shamar Stewart, the Bengals are just being idiotic. That's a first round talent. And the fact that you want to throw in a clause in his contract to say, if you don't play well, we're going to cut the last 2 years and you're not going to get that guaranteed money. That's just asking, like, why wouldn't you sign him to a regular contract? There is not a lot to lose with it. And he is a viable first-round draft pick. That's why he picked him in the first place. We saw his film at Texas A&M. He made a huge impact on the field. I think he was going to make a huge impact for the Bengals right off the start. But the fact that you want to go and have these issues with paying the man his money, I don't blame him all that much. I mean, that falls on the Bengals. This falls a lot on the franchises for what they have done. And it's Shamar Stewart. I don't know how it's going to work, if he's able to go back to college or not. I don't know how he has – eligibility to, or how that even works.
Sue, like Diego Pavia did, he'd probably just sue and get it.
Probably at this point. I don't know. It's out of my area of expertise now, but you know, we'd be avoiding all these conversations if these franchises would just guarantee first round contracts and not worry about second round contracts.
The rumor, right, or the rule for this is going to be is if these players don't sign their contracts within a year, that and the draft comes around, they can re-enter the draft. So Shamar Stewart goes the entire season and doesn't sign his contract, he can re-enter next year and get drafted by a different team. Now you're risking not getting drafted in the first round or even the second round. And then the second round draft picks might even fall to the fifth, sixth round, might go undrafted. That's what you're risking. Do they think it's worth it? Should they do it? That's the big question. Are you willing to risk losing out on maybe a 1 year not guaranteed over getting a lot less money in your entirety of your contract? That's what these rookies have to weigh going forward. Now, Shamar Stewart's on his own here. The Bengals are just idiotic, stupid. Why are we putting this clause into his contract? It wasn't in the last two rookies they drafted. Amarius Mims and Miles Murphy wasn't in their contracts at all. The Bengals are generationally dumb losers when it comes in contract negotiations. They just recently started giving money away like they did with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. But you don't re-sign Trey Hendrickson. He's sitting out the season. You draft what you assume would be his replacement in Shamar Stewart. You refuse to pay him. Do you want to win football games? Joe Burrow cannot win you every football game. Unfortunately, in the AFC, there's a person named Patrick Mahomes that you're going to have to get through. And there's another person named Josh Allen. There's also another person named Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow cannot do that by himself. The offense cannot win you football games in the playoffs every time. Defense has to show up. I mean, you don't have somebody rushing the passer like the Bengals do right now. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Stupid situation. Just pay the man his money.
Just pay him his money. Get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. You're going to have to do it one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Last thing today, Nathan. Think you were looking forward to this the most. This has gone viral on social media. Mattel is debuting the first ever Uno Social Club at the Palms in Las Vegas. The immersive, over-the-top experience is designed to bring the iconic card game into a real-world setting. That's what Mattel released in their news release. It's not going to be on the casino floor. It's going to be a private room where you can go into and play Uno. You have to be invited to it. And it's not only going to be in Vegas, they're going to expand it, Nathan. They're going to be going to L.A., New York City, Chicago, Atlanta, and Austin. The closest one to us, obviously, is Atlanta. What do you think about them bringing Uno to casinos? Are you going?
Well, I have to get the invite first. not to, like, toot my own horn, but I'm the Uno master. I know everything about Uno. I'm the best, you know, because there's so much skill in playing Uno. But I think this is a very creative idea, and this is definitely a game everyone has played at least once in their childhood. And it brings back fond memories, and the fact that we're incorporating into gambling is a little bit funny. But I really have questions around, like, what are the official Uno rules? Because everyone always plays with different sets of rules. And
can you stack the plus fours?
It's really confusing, yeah. I would have to, like, study a rule book and then how do I even get invited to one of these things? So yeah, but it's creative. I enjoyed the thought of the idea. And you know, maybe we'll just start playing Uno a lot more to just try to get good at it. But in reality, it's not a strategy game. It's not very skillful. You're just trying to get rid of your hand. There's not a lot of math involved in doing this.
I wonder what the arguments and fights are going to be at the table when somebody puts down a plus four when you got Uno. That's going to be something that'll be fun, because that's always an argument or a funny discussion at the table when we're playing with friends, is you have the Uno and then somebody hits a reverse and you get hit with a plus four from somebody else, exactly. Or you get hit with a skip. How does that play out in a setting?
And a lot of times it's a personal thing. Like you're not just handing a plus four to someone random. you know who's beside you and you know why you're doing it. So it's definitely a creative game and it's going to cause a lot of uproar. And it's just one of those competitive games that you know arguments will be started over it. But it's very creative, like I said.
Nathan, if you want to enter the contest to go play in these Uno-themed rooms or suites, you must post a TikTok video using Mattel's new Uno reverse card filter and the hashtags hashtag Uno Social Club and hashtag Mattel Contest. You're 21 years or older, so you already qualify there and be living in the United States. That's what you have to do, Nathan. Would you be willing to do that to get into the room?
I guess we'll have to see and find out.
Before we wrap up today, Nathan, and get out of here, outside of Uno and games that are already in casinos, what would you like to see brought to it that you know and love as a card game?
I mean, I guess we can throw in Goldfish. I mean, Go Fish. I mean, that's an iconic game. Other than that, I didn't play a lot of card games growing up. I played a lot of board games. So if you want to incorporate some board games, let's throw in some Sorry in there. Let's get a game of Sorry.
We'll get into a fist fight at the casino.
Oh, I know. that is a different level of competitiveness. I could probably think of some other ones. There's a lot of
Monopoly. You'd be there for hours.
You wouldn't leave the casino if you're playing Monopoly. It's just an endless game of Monopoly. That's awful. But there's definitely some other ones out there.
Battleship
would be fun. People cheat a lot of Battleship, so that's something you got to watch out for. Gosh, what else is there? I don't know. I can't think of board games off the top of my head, but there's a lot out there that you can turn into. I don't think I've ever played Choosing the Ladders.
Really?
But that's more of a popular one, but I haven't played it before. But like I said, there's a lot of good ones out there that you can probably incorporate into some of these casinos. So we'll just have to wait and see. But, that's exciting. I'm going to tune into the whatever gambling channel to watch people play Uno. I will do that.
Uno championships, like poker championships.
Exactly.
That would be hilarious. People stream it all the time on Twitch and YouTube where they show that type of stuff. The biggest one was when Ninja, Tim the Tap Man, Courage JD, and I believe basically I Do Work were streaming Uno. And then there was that viral moment where Ninja had like five cards in his hand left and it was green. And of the five cards, he had no green. And he sat there for a minute. And he's like 20
cards. Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
And then he's like, I don't have a green card. And he finally got one, played it. And then the person right after him hit the reverse. And so he had to draw again. And then at the end of it, he gets a plus four. And for some idiotic reason, he makes the color green again.
It's wonderful. that's the type of moments that I would love to see with Uno coming to casinos.
That would be the best moment, is just seeing that happen to someone where they're working the table, they're down to five cards or two cards or three cards. Oh, it's red. All they have is blue and yellow. Tough what luck. Are we gonna do? Good luck. Go around. That would just be an experience to watch. And then even play if you were able to get into that suite. But this is something new and exciting. I hope casinos and places around the country kind of dive into this, add new games, new fun experiences. Like you were talking about, Nathan, was Sorry. Even in casinos would be funny. That would go crazy. Clue would be kind of cool in a casino setting.
I don't know how you would implement that, but that's also cool.
But this is something new and exciting for people to go out and experience. I appreciate everyone for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.